Hello and welcome to episode 100 of the Travel Diaries podcast. I'm journalist Holly Rubinstein, and today I'm your co-host as I'm joined by my other half, my partner in life and travels, Alex, who is going to be interviewing me about my travel diaries. That's right, after 9 seasons, 99 episodes, and quite a few requests over the years, I thought it was about time that I shared with you some of the many destinations that have shaped my life. I hope that in this episode, you'll get to know a little bit more about me. So, from Miami to Montecito, Scotland to Switzerland, and many, many more, here are my travel diaries.
How do we start this off? I mean, I'm interviewing you, but you're the host of the Travel Diary. So who's welcoming who today?
I'm making you the honorary host.
I'm the host.
The okay. Honorary host today.
Okay, wow. Okay, right.
No pressure.
Holly, welcome to the Travel Diaries podcast. Is that how we start?
Yeah. Thank you so much, Alex, husband. Thank you so much for joining me. We are recording this in a brief moment while our baby is asleep.
Yep.
I have to say, I was offered some really great possible people to interview me for this episode, but I just thought it had to be you while we could sneak it in while she's having a quick nap.
I feel like I was probably the last resort in doing this, but the tables have turned. The interviewer becomes the interviewee. How are you feeling about that?
Well, it's something that my lovely listeners have asked about basically since the podcast began. Like, they said, when are you going to do your travel diaries? And I've just always felt like it hasn't felt like the right time, and my guests have always just had these incredible stories to tell. But now, it being episode 100,
which congratulations, huge milestone.
I can't quite believe it. So now it feels like the right time to,
well, given to you share. Have had 100 episodes, and given your wonderful listeners have been asking for this for many years, there is no excuse for bad answers here, because you've had years to prepare for this.
Well, it's really funny, isn't it? Because you and I have often talked, like when we've been away at dinner and things, about what would be our travel diaries and things like that. But then when push comes to shove, like when it's on the day, I can so see why so many of my guests are so, they're like so conflicted about their choices. And I'm just having to go with what comes to mind today. I've tried not to prepare because I want to just see what comes into my head.
Okay. Wow. So this is an off the cuff response to the questions. Wow. Well, let's get going.
Okay.
With the very first chapter of Holly Rubinstein's travel diaries, your earliest childhood travel memory.
Well, that has to be Miami in Florida in the USA.
Yep.
So I first, not that I remember this, but I first flew to Miami when I was 10 weeks old.
10 weeks?
10 weeks, yeah.
Wow. Having just done a flight with a 5-month-old,
yeah.
I cannot
kudos to my mum.
How difficult a 10-week-old was on what would have been a 10-hour flight?
Yeah, nearly, yeah. Although I think I probably slept most of the way, obviously. Yeah. But Miami has an incredibly special place in my heart. It's a place where my grandma, so my dad's mum, lived in South Florida, and she lived in an apartment in a condo in an apartment building, and then we had an apartment in the same building. And going there on most school holidays to see her was, without question, actually the highlight of my childhood. And I still dream about Miami as though it's, you know, a place that I'm going to all the time. Yet in the last 10 years, you and I have only, we've only been there once, haven't we? So it's a place that is a treasured memory. I remember so distinctly the excitement throughout my childhood of getting, ironically, loving flying at that time, getting onto the plane, being, you get such a fuss made of you when you're little, when you get on the plane, and you know, they gave you those like
little pouches,
those little activity bags.
They take you to see the pilot.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. We flew Pan Am.
Ooh.
We always flew Pan Am. I remember so distinctly that point when you get above the clouds, when you're on the plane, and then it's just
a sea of clouds blue. Below you. Yeah.
And it's just blue sky, and the sun would flood in into the plane, and it would fill me with this excitement that we were about to get to this destination that meant so much to me. And then when we landed in Miami and we'd come out of the air conditioning into the car park, which was underground, and this sea of humidity would hit us.
Yeah.
That I can remember the smell so distinctly, and you could hear like the rustle of the palm tree leaves that would be like as you kind of came out of the car park, and it felt so different yeah. to England. And what at that time, so like 30 years ago, America was in many ways like really far ahead of the UK.
Yeah.
So like the films came out in the cinema like
a year beforehand sometimes.
Yeah, months yeah. in advance. They came out on video yeah. months in advance. There were things in the supermarket that were completely different. There were shampoos you could buy in the pharmacy that they didn't have in England. And so weirdly, it's the really like mundane things that stick in my memory. Going to the cinema, seeing films that felt so exciting because yeah. no one had seen them.
Watching TV and watching like Friends and the season before it would have been the season
yes.
in the UK.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that. And going to Office Depot and buying sparkly gel pens
now,
that
I was
they
ask
didn't
you about
have.
This. I was going to ask you about this because I've obviously been to Miami with you, and the reflection that I had was it's a very different experience being a split nationality person where some of your family lives abroad. Because when you go on holiday, you're not really going on a holiday to travel. You're going on holiday to live your second life somewhere else. Mm. And the things that yeah. you do are quite mundane. Like you go to the supermarket a lot. You go to the mall. Yeah. You go to Office Depot a lot. Like what are a few of the like second life things, because you've told me a few before, that spring to mind when you think of that life in Miami?
Oh, going to Barnes & Noble, the bookshop. I'd sit and get a big pile of books, and they had Starbucks in Barnes & Noble. Like this is way before there were kind of coffee shops and bookstores in England. So that smell of coffee
yeah.
still always takes me back to Barnes & Noble. Going to the mall, you know, yeah. going that the smell of the fountains in the mall.
Holly took me to this mall, by the way, as part of her tour of Miami. I was taken yeah. to, it was Aventura Mall.
Wait, it's one of the biggest malls in America, actually.
Yeah.
And what did you think of it?
I mean, it's kind of, you know, when you're young, you think of like 90s America, and a shopping mall is pretty pervasive in terms of your thinking of America. So when you go there, it's every chain and department store you thought of, but supersized.
Yeah. It's beautiful. It is also quite beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Macy's, JCPenney,
yep.
Sears, all the, Bloomingdale's, obviously, all the good ones. Yeah. So it was, like you say, it was those like mundane things, going to Publix, the supermarket. My American audience will know all these names, yep. of course. But in England, like Publix, I suppose, would be a bit like Tesco's. But it was so exciting. I would see these like piles of cookies, or basically so much unhealthy food, like all the most amazing cakes and
pastries. We went to Cheesecake Factory.
The Cheesecake Factory, yeah. yeah. That was another trip down nostalgia lane.
And actually, that mall has a very special place in our history, and I'm sure we'll touch on this later, but that was where I bought the shirt that I eventually got married in.
Oh, really? I didn't yeah. know that.
Yeah, in Nordstrom.
Oh, right. Yeah. Go. Well, there you go.
There you go.
I should say now that kind of wanting to evoke Miami beyond Office Depot's in the
because I think of 90s Miami, I think of Will Smith, I think of the beach, I think of yeah. Art Deco districts. Like, yeah. let's talk more about that. What yeah. about the rest of Miami?
Well, I think that Miami is really a Marmite destination, and unless it's a place that you know, you could end up having not a great time there, I would say, because a lot of it could feel like you're staying in maybe like Leicester Square in England or Times Square.
Yeah.
And in that it's like that there are some very touristy parts that if you get sucked into staying down on South Beach in the kind of South Beach strip where there are a lot of clubs and things, it can be very noisy and a bit raucous. There's a lot more to Miami than that. Firstly, it's an unbelievable cultural melting pot. I mean, you know, the first language of Miami being Spanish.
Yeah.
And to go there, keeping with my childhood memories, you know, to go there where people were speaking Spanish around me, where there were Cuban influences, where there were Haitian influences, Latin American influences, that was so exciting. You know, it felt like I was in this really unusual place. And we'd pick up on that when we'd go to Little Havana,
yeah,
which is a district of Miami, which is populated by Cubans, and they have incredible Cuban restaurants.
We went to one that had a queue outside.
Versailles.
It was an absolute institution.
Yeah.
And I remember queuing, and the food was just astonishing.
Yeah. And it's a slice. The thing is, it's a real authentic slice of Cuba in Florida. I think that's the point, is that these pockets really, really feel like you're in Cuba. I think that's what's amazing about it. Since I grew up in Miami, so much has changed. I mean, there are whole districts that didn't exist. So the Wynwood Walls, which is such a cool area. If you were to go to Miami now, it's a kind of, it reminded me a little bit maybe of Shoreditch, would you say? Like street art, really cool, like craft breweries, all quite low rise, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's a really good analogy. I mean, it's essentially
quite gritty.
It's a grid or an area, like kind of 5x5 sets of streets, all of which is flooded with graffiti art, cool cafes, cool restaurants.
Yeah.
And it had a really
cool atmosphere. Yeah. And not far at all from the beach. I mean, that's the thing with Miami, is that you're always just a stone's throw from the most incredible stretch of golden sand. The water is warm. And of course, like, you know, the Art Deco architecture, like you can't compete with the oldest, most perfectly preserved strip of Art Deco architecture in the world.
Like, there's some great walking tours you can do around those.
Yeah,
to take them all in.
Yeah. And then you're in such close proximity to the Everglades. See, this is a state where there are alligators running around, there are manatees, there are dolphins.
Holly likes Florida, in case you hadn't realised.
well, I like South Florida. I haven't travelled much around the north yet.
And obviously, Southern Florida, the Keys, holds a very special place.
Yeah.
In our heart.
And actually, that's not in my travel diary. So yeah, the Isla Mirada, which is just about an hour and a half's drive from Miami, about an hour and a half, is one of the first of the Florida Keys, which are little islands that kind of are dotted off the end of Florida, and they're all connected by bridges. And they're beautiful. I mean, they're...
One single road goes through all the islands.
Yeah. And Alex and I got engaged there. So it's a beautiful, peaceful, tropical spot.
And lots of people go down to right the southern tip to Key West. But we stayed in Isla Mirada, which is a slightly quieter island in the middle. And we stayed at a wonderful hotel.
Yeah, actually, oh my gosh, that would be such a perfect hidden gem.
Yes.
It isn't my hidden gem. So it's called Casa Mirada. And if you're flying to Miami, a lot of people fly to Miami to then transit onto other destinations.
Including the Bahamas and things, but you can go to, it feels like the Caribbean when you're on these islands, because it essentially is the Caribbean. It's the Caribbean Sea.
Is it?
I'm now questioning myself, but I think so.
No.
Well, at least the Atlantic side.
Yeah. We'll have to check this out afterwards. Regardless, it's very, very warm, the water there, and clear. So yeah, Casa Mirada. And our daughter Isabella, her middle name is Isla, which is because of Isla Mirada, because we wanted to commemorate that.
Lots of people might think it's Isla after the island in Scotland, but actually no, it's a more Isla, tropical.
Short for Isla Mirada.
Right. So from that earliest formative experience onto the place that you first fell in love with?
You know, I always get a little bit frustrated with some of my guests. I give the same answer for every chapter because there's a place that means so much to them.
It's not Miami, is it?
Well, no, but it actually would be the first place I fell in love with. It would be Miami, but I'm not going to say Miami because the second place that I fell in love with, I would say is Hawaii.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was my first taste, I think, of like real paradise, and was something that, you know, we built up to for months and months and months at home. The excitement going to Hawaii, like that was something that we...
How old were you?
I think I would have been probably about 9, I want to say. And we flew first to San Francisco because some of my family were there. And then from there, we boarded... Again, an exciting memory relating to planes. We boarded Hawaiian Airlines, where everything was purple. And when you got onto the plane, they put the lace around your neck, you know, the flower garlands. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And all the crew were wearing the lace the whole way as well. They were playing the tropical...
You know, I love that. Like, that's probably the only... Aloha. It's so rare to get like an airline experience where you kind of already...
Transported.
The only time that's come close was when we flew to Iceland.
Yes.
And they have those twinkling lights, like the Northern Lights.
Yeah.
And that was amazing.
The overhead bins.
You kind of feel like you're kind of gradually moving your way into the Arctic, kind of north.
Yeah. And this was like moving into like ultra-tropical destination. It was just so exciting.
More airlines should do that.
I agree. But I guess not many are associated with a specific destination.
Yes.
That was the first place I fell in love with because it was so exciting from the journey and then landing. I think we landed on Oahu, actually, where we didn't spend any time. I think that's quite a touristy spot. We transferred immediately to Kauai. We did a little tour of some of the islands. So we went to Kauai first, which I remember so distinctly as being so abundant with unbelievable tropical birds, parrots and amazing butterflies. And it was just so vibrant. And it was kind of Jurassic in feeling because it was just so green and verdant and amazing. And then we went to the big island and stayed in a place called Hilo. And it was there, I think, that really I fell in love with because Hilo, we visited Mount Kilauea. And Mount Kilauea is an active volcano that's spewing lava all the time. And from different parts of the island, you just see an orange glow in the air.
Wow.
And it just was like, how can we be here? How can we be so close to this geographic wonder? It just felt so... Oh, it was just so invigorating and exciting. And we went for this walk along the lava fields, along just black, crusty lava fields that just went on and on and on, and with the glow of the volcano in the distance. And yeah, I just remember thinking how exciting it was. And then from there, we flew to Maui and we actually stayed in the White Lotus Hotel from season one. Yeah. And I just remember, I mean, obviously I'd had a taste of that tropical experience spending time in Miami, but there was just something about Hawaii.
Different type of tropical.
Yeah,
though.
It was a really different type of tropical.
It's more natural and island-based rather than Miami, which is kind of, obviously a lot of it is constructed. So with high rises and those sorts of things.
Yeah, I really recommend Hawaii as a place to visit. It is a collection of islands that are also individual in their characteristics. Kauai to Maui to Big Island, like Big Island's climate, Big Island's topography is so different. So like one trip there, you can experience so much. And I think actually looking through my travel diaries, diversity within short proximity is definitely something that I see as a huge selling point for travel.
Definitely.
Yeah.
It's Hawaii is a place for me that I would put alongside like Bora Bora and the Galapagos Islands that are kind of these places that almost feel like impossible to get to and seem to hold so much wonder for those that have been there. But it's like you really have to commit to a trip there.
Well, certainly from the UK, you really have to commit.
Course, yeah.
It's a destination that you can reach relatively easy from the US. But for us, it was like 17 hours of flying. So it was like a really, really big deal.
Now, you asked your listeners to send in some questions.
Yes.
And you haven't seen these?
No. Well, I saw them when they came in on my Instagram, but I have no idea what you're asking me.
I've then sifted through them, and first shout out to Josh Johnson, who has asked for every chapter to also ask the equivalent for hotels. Now, we're not going to do that for every chapter.
No, we're already at 20 minutes here.
But given you are such a hotel aficionado, it's one of your passions, and I'm sure we'll get to that later. Do you remember the first hotel you fell in love with?
Well, yeah, it would be the
White Lotus one.
The White Lotus one, which was the Four Seasons in Maui.
And that must be doing a serious trade off the back of that.
Yeah.
Okay, so that you're 9 years old, obviously now the audience knows you as a travel journalist, podcaster. What they probably don't know about you is that you've had a number of career trajectories since then.
Before then.
Before then, in fact. you can tell I'm not a professional. Tell us about your budding career as a singer.
Oh, well, yeah. So I thought that I would have ended up as a professional singer-songwriter. I mean, that was what, when I was at school, I thought was going to be my career path. So when I was about 15, I want to say, I was very musical at school, played the piano and clarinet and saxophone and sung a lot, and was very into composition. And when I was about 15 or so, yeah, I was discovered, in inverted commas, by a record producer. And I was taken to a recording studio and we wrote loads of songs. And for several years, that was, you know, deemed to be my career path. It was an extremely exciting time. I got to record an album, which no one has ever heard, sadly. But I got to record several tracks at Abbey Road Studios, wow, which of course was like, you know,
the place to be,
it still is. And is another memory that, like, another time in my life that I treasure so, so much, you know, the experience of collaborating with Grammy winning producers and songwriters. I recorded several tracks with one of Sting's producers and like his Grammys were just sitting behind us. I loved the creative process of writing a song and adding in all the vocals, doing all the backing vocals, layering it up. And I would gig a lot all across London, but it was also an industry that after several years of trying to make it, I was offered different record deals, including one in Miami, actually, where I flew out to Miami to speak with them. But people will probably know that, you know, making it in music is really like quite, there are so many hurdles you have to overcome. So you can be offered the deal, but then you have to, you know, then record the album and then that has to be a success and the next one has to be a success and all of that kind of thing. And it got to a point when I chose to go to university and I did carry on gigging and recording, but I gradually decided that the industry wasn't for me. It was quite seedy.
If you think back to when that would have been, like late 90s, early noughties, you know, you think of some of the people that have been through that and the difficulties they, like, think of Britney, for instance, and the pressure she was put under. It was quite a weird industry at the time. It certainly changed since.
And actually, it was Britney, Max Martin and Britney's team that my initial kind of meetings and stuff were about going to record with.
Wow.
But yeah, a different side of my life, but it has all led to where I am now because I was gigging with people like Ed Sheeran and Jessie J. And when I was at university, I decided I wanted to write about music instead. And so I could get interviews with some of these people who were kind of my peers in the gigging scene, quite good exclusives, really. And then from there, got into music journalism and into entertainment journalism. And then that kind of led to where we are now.
Well, a huge journey of discovery through those chapters, work chapters. And that leads me to chapter three, which was or is the place you learnt the most about yourself.
I think this is a really hard chapter, a hard chapter for all of my guests to answer. I'm going to say Frankfurt in Germany.
Wow, didn't expect that.
Yeah, I decided to go to Frankfurt for medical treatment for a long-term health condition that I've had since my late teens, which has, you know, certainly been life limiting for me on the day to day. I have quite a lot of chronic pain and fatigue issues, not something I want to dwell on and something that I kind of keep quite separate from the podcast. But though the treatment that I had there was unsuccessful, the place that I was staying in also treated people who had cancer, people who were certainly at the end of their life. And we were all there kind of sitting around, like hooked up to IV drips. And I couldn't stop picturing myself being in different environments to what I was in then. So I would be, I think I talked to you when you were out there a lot about places I was like, oh, I just want to be in the mountains or I just need to be by the sea.
I remember it.
Almost like to a kind of an obsessive level, which I realized like I was kind of just desperately trying to kind of transport my mind to be in an environment that would be peaceful and healing and stuff. Not that it wasn't where I was, but, you know, I wanted to be somewhere else,
a sort of form of escape.
Yeah, exactly. And it really struck me while I was there that I had to make travel a part of my life, that I thought about it all the time. Mm. And we talked about it all the time. And I had to do what I could to include travel within my career.
Yeah.
At that time, I was the entertainment producer on Good Morning Britain, which if you're an international listener, I imagine it's like Good Morning America or Good Morning Australia, breakfast TV show. And those hours weren't really conducive to my health issues. And it was just quite a full-on job. And I thought to myself, I need to find a way that I can integrate travel into my life. So I think it was while I was out there that I actually wrote a pitch to the Telegraph for a travel story. And because I'd written for other newspapers, thankfully, I mean, I thank my lucky stars, it was commissioned. And that kind of set the ball rolling where I had a part of my life that involved travel. I was able to talk about travel and how much I cared about it. And soon after that, I decided to start the podcast because I felt that there was this gap in the market for combining travel and entertainment. And I love podcasts and I loved interviewing celebrities. That was what I was used to doing in my career previous to that. So being in Frankfurt, I think, taught me about perseverance. It taught me about ambition. It taught me about acceptance. Like, you know, I have to accept who I am with my physical limitations and work around them in every sense. And it taught me about hope, really, because I decided there and then that I was going to take a punt on this challenging and competitive field. And one step further was starting the podcast, you know, venturing into completely new territory at that time. Podcasts weren't such a big thing then.
No, very few people had a podcast, whereas everyone seems to have a podcast now.
Yeah, exactly. So it was just a really pivotal point in my life, which I couldn't have done without you supporting me to decide to make that decision. And I kept, you know, my other work on the back burner. I did shifts and things as a TV producer. But it was that time where I decided I wasn't going to let my physical limitations stop me and I was going to go for it. And I'm really pleased that I did, because look where we are now, episode 100.
It's, yeah, I didn't think you'd say Frankfurt, because you kind of, you sometimes leap to a place that is epic in its own proportions, and that place teaches you something. And lots of your guests have had great answers where the place itself has delivered something, but this more was a case of the situation making you reflect on it. And I think it's a great answer about the power of travel. You know, people leap to, and I leapt to earlier, the point about escape, but also offers hope. It offers new horizons. It offers energy, perhaps when energy is lacking. And I think that's quite a nice love letter, albeit in difficult circumstances, to the power of travel.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
What can I just ask out of interest what you thought I was going to say?
Do you know what? I hadn't spent too much time thinking about what your answers were going to be. I'd kind of imagined they were like sort of going to be this epic destination. Maybe I thought you might have said our road trip around the US.
Oh, right. Yeah. But actually, you bring up traveling around the US, which is something that we did quite extensively a few years ago. And moving on to...
Whoa. I'm the host here. Moving on to chapter 4. Your all-time favorite destination.
You have to use the phrases that I say.
Okay, let's pause here and go on to chapter 4, your all-time favorite destination.
The big one.
The big one.
The
yes.
big one.
The tricky
Such
one.
Such a tough one. Yes. Such a tough one. I would say it is California.
Okay.
I'm going to go quite broad there. Yep. I'm going to say that's because a trip to California can include a desert experience in Joshua Tree or in Palm Springs,
yep.
so full of history and heritage. Then, you know, Big Sur, the big mountains, the dramatic cliff drops, looking out to the Pacific, and then moving up along Highway 1. I mean, my point being, it's such a diverse state. And I love LA. It's one of my favorite cities in the world. I know you don't love it as much as I do, but to me there's an energy about Los Angeles which is magical.
Yeah.
In fact, I would go so far to say as it's electrifying for me.
I sensed that when we arrived. It was, and you hadn't been there in a long time.
No.
And so I think the thing with for me with LA is it goes a little bit back to your point earlier about Hawaii and having lots of things in close proximity. I find LA is weird calling it LA because it is about four or five different, very different towns/cities all jumbled together in one behemoth kind of metropolis. Mm. That if you go thinking, I want to sample LA, you need to go and actually say to yourself, no, I need to sample the five different parts of LA, from Santa Monica to West Hollywood to Malibu, which really is still kind of part of the wider LA space.
Yeah.
And if you don't do that, you'll get Beverly Hills, you'll get a very different experience.
Venice.
And if you try and do them all in one day, for instance, you're going to spend half your day on a freeway getting frustrated with traffic.
Yeah. I mean, were it not for the traffic, more people would love LA.
Yes.
I mean, frankly.
It needs a metro.
Yeah. Well, it has a metro. It
doesn't go very far away.
No. It's not something that's used a great deal. I love Los Angeles because having mentioned my previous life as a singer and then going on to work on red carpets, which is what I did on my 20s, interviewing, celebrities about their films and their TV shows, it's just a world that I had a taste of in London. And then you land in LA and it's like, that is Hollywood, the glamour, the excitement, the palm trees lining the streets. I adore Santa Monica and Venice, walking along the Venice canals. The fact that there are canals running through right by the beach there with the little bridges that go over
them. It's my favorite spot in LA is Santa Monica and the Venice canals.
Yeah.
It's just, that's got such an energy to it. It's even so, more so than great. The rest of it.
And but listen, I don't want to just stick on LA.
No, so I was going to ask you.
Yeah, going on to Santa Barbara. Montecito.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that is another place that is an all-time favorite. We often talk about wanting to live there, in fact, even. I mean,
Harry and Meghan beat us to it.
Well, bloody Harry and Meghan, because Alex and I got married on the beach in Montecito, which is near to Santa Barbara, as part of a road trip that we did in the US, quite a spontaneous decision. We had a proper wedding in England. Then Harry and Meghan were inspired by us, I would say clearly.
Yes, they obviously looked at your Instagram, saw the pictures and thought, we should move there.
Yes.
And inflate the house prices by 10x.
Exactly. Yeah. Then Ariana Grande moved there. So I don't think we'll be living there anytime soon.
No,
but it's certainly
been priced out.
Yeah, it's certainly an all-time favorite destination. And then, I mean, California, we still haven't gone up to, San Francisco, wine country and beyond. So
the national parks.
Of course, and the national parks, which I was going to also mention. So, I mean, I think that I could have my next 10 to 15 holidays in California alone. Today's episode is supported by CV Villas. Villa holidays are booming after the pandemic, and it's not surprising to be able to have a home all for yourself where everyone can get together is such a luxury. CV Villa's 2023 collection of incredible destinations for your next holiday is on sale now. They handpick their properties in the most beautiful places across Europe, Morocco, Sri Lanka, and the Caribbean, selected for their location, quality, and facilities. And what's more, each one of their destinations offers cultural and immersive experiences guaranteed to capture your heart. So from boat hire in Corfu and private chef services in Mallorca to wine tasting in Tuscany and safari tours in Sri Lanka, the team will help you create a trip of a lifetime. It's super easy to book with packages that include the villa, flights, car hire and experiences. And booking with CV means booking with confidence because your packages are protected. It's not too late to book your 2023 summer villa holiday. So why not make it one to remember and give their villa specialists a call or visit cvvillas.com. That's cvvillas.com to find out more.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Today's episode is supported by Airbnb. It has been a long old winter here in the UK, and in between podcast seasons, I'm going to take a little bit of downtime to seek out some warmth. I'm jetting off to the Greek island of Mykonos, visiting some places that have been on my bucket list. And while I'm hopefully soaking up some Mediterranean sun, my home will be hosting guests from all over the world, thanks to Airbnb. It's the perfect way to make your travels even more rewarding. Instead of letting your home sit empty while you're off exploring new destinations, why not turn it into a cozy retreat for fellow travelers, just like I do? Whether you choose to rent out your entire space or just a spare room, it's up to you. I list my spare bedroom, and it's been a fantastic experience, both financially rewarding and a great way to connect with new people. So if you're planning your own summer getaway, or any trip for that matter, consider putting your home on Airbnb. It's a fantastic way to earn extra income that can go towards your travel expenses, souvenirs, or even that special treat you've been eyeing. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.co.uk/host. Thank you to Airbnb for supporting the Travel Diaries.
What came close? What was second? What was in the running when you chose California? What was the one competing to be top spot?
Oh, that's interesting. I had a lot of cities then that I was thinking about.
Okay, well, hold that then, because I've got a quick fire round where we'll touch on cities.
Okay.
With that in mind, let's jump to that. So,
are we going to go to quickfire now?
Unless there's more about California you want to touch on.
No, yeah, let's do quickfire then.
So this has been, a lot of your listeners have helped this, but the first few ones are going to be instinctive answers, okay?
Okay.
One word.
One word only?
One word.
Okay, fine.
Beach or mountain?
Oh my God, beach.
City break or nature break?
Nature break.
By the sea or by the pool?
Pool.
Hot or cold?
Hot.
Fly and flop or big adventure?
Oh, I mean both. They're a big adventure.
Emma23 wants to know, and I know the answer to this, do you go with the flow or do you plan?
Plan.
Okay, hotels, boutique or old classic?
Boutique or old classic?
Yeah.
Boutique. That's quite a weird category differentiation there.
I went with it.
Okay, fine.
Right, now we're moving up to one word answers. These will take some time to think about.
Okay.
Your all time favorite hotel?
Oh, I mean, we have talked about this endlessly, haven't we? At this moment in time, the hotel that comes to my mind is the Waldorf Astoria Maldives Ether Fushi.
Our honeymoon.
Yeah.
That was just the most incredible place.
Yes, yeah.
And it's interesting when you see now people write about it, they seem to write in those terms that it is the best in the Maldives, the best in the world. It's
Divya Tani, the Condé Nast Traveler editor, who was on a few weeks ago, she's there at the moment and saying how incredible it is. And I imagine she's visited a lot of the Maldives.
Okay, so this again was a request from a lot of your listeners to shift to more UK-focused places. So what's your UK favourite hotel?
Oh, UK obviously includes Scotland. And
obviously.
Well, I was just thinking of England. I would say that we had an amazing stay at 57 Nord in Kintail Mountains in Scotland, which isn't a hotel.
No.
It's a private hire rental. Which looks out over the loch and over Aileen Donan Castle is a decent price, I would say.
Yes, yeah. For what you get, it's an amazing, amazing value.
And just the most beautiful landscape. All about that vista.
All about that. Okay, favourite country, not the UK.
I mean, realistically, I would probably go between...
I mean, the US have been like two of your chapters so far.
I was going to say, I mean, I think it is the US because it's a country I know best. But in terms of Europe, I'd go for probably like in Italy.
Italy, okay. Yeah. And then if we shift that to the UK, which region or county holds the most in your heart?
Well, West Sussex.
Yes.
Not that I grew up in West Sussex, actually. I grew up in Surrey. But West Sussex, I think, is full of hidden gems that I am a huge advocate for.
Yeah.
tune into my National Parks episode where I chat about how much I love West Sussex and the South Downs, and Arundel, Petworth, Midhurst. Beautiful villages.
If there is a West Sussex tourist board.
Well, and obviously, we've been to the Cotswolds loads as well. I love the Cotswolds too. But I mean, West Sussex. Yes,
that's the first thing that sprung to mind. Yes, this is part of this.
Clearing that head.
If there was a West Sussex tourist board, you should be on the payroll because this is some serious kudos we're giving to West Sussex. Okay, favourite city?
Favourite city was between Prague, Lisbon and Barcelona. And I'm going with Barcelona.
Barcelona. What we will say this, one of the very few cities in Europe, big cities that have a beach.
Oh, that have a beach, yeah. Love a beach city, like Miami.
Yeah, and it just adds a whole new layer to visiting there that you don't normally get.
Exactly. Again, a destination that offers multiple things in one location.
In
one location.
There we go. Here's the theme of this episode. Mm. Right, you don't know these are coming.
Okay.
I'm going to turn the table on your own podcast on you.
What do you mean by that?
Favourite chapter. Of the answers that you've been given, what's your favourite chapter?
Well, I would say Hidden Gem, definitely.
It's unearthed some absolute classics. Or less so classics.
A hidden gem that was picked by one of my guests is now my hidden gem on this podcast.
Wow. Well, there was a question about that. Which bit of advice from your guests have you enacted? So why don't you tell us? Or is this an answer for later?
It's an answer for later.
Okay. What's your favourite ever answer that a guest has given you?
Oh, Alex, that's a really hard question. I don't want to kind of bring down the mood a bit, but I suppose it's the answers where my guests have been really, where travel has been really emotional for them. And what my listeners won't know from listening today is when I was talking about Miami there, I was like, I had a lump in my throat, I was swallowing back. Just talking about it, so emotional for me. And it's the times when my guests, you know, it is generally sadder memories, but a destination just brings it all up for them.
I remember Hugh Bonneville was particularly sad.
Talking about being in India when his mum had passed away and he went to this remote place to read the letters that people had sent to him. When Joe Malone talked about going to New York and going through cancer treatment there. So those kind of times when people just are so clearly transported in their mind to that moment in time. And it just shows just how powerful travel is, how emotional travel is. So I think it's those moments when people are sharing that kind of intimate story with me. I feel so honored and touched that they're there with me sharing that.
Maybe favorite's not the right word. It's almost most cherished answer because it means so much to them.
It's touching. And I think to myself how lucky I am to be sitting among such interesting people and for them to be so honest with me, I think, you know, because in when I was doing, you know, red carpet stuff, the answers that you get are always just
media trained.
So media trained, so generic. I'd go online and I'd see that they'd given the same answer to three other outlets, you know? So to have this is just something for the podcast, for me, for the listeners. And it's special. That was not a very quick fire answer.
That wasn't, but these last four aren't quick fire. Okay. You said that the all time favorite destination is the hardest answer. This will be the hardest answer.
Oh.
Who is your favorite ever guest? And you can't say, I can't answer that.
Who is my favourite ever guest? Who is my favourite ever guest? The guest I was most proud of speaking to was when I went to Sir Michael Palin's house.
Yes, I drove you.
Alex drove me. And it was within COVID times, wasn't it?
It was
in a weird window where we were first allowed out. So he was literally one of the few first people that I saw
out
of lockdown. And he invited us to his house. The Sainsbury's man was still there unpacking the shopping. He was just
Was he wiping down all the bags and ingredients
like we did. And, you know, I went upstairs to his library. His wife was there saying, hello, can I make you a cup of tea? So sitting in his office library,
surreal,
chatting to him about his travel diaries, that was a real pinch me moment.
Especially when I think alongside, you know, Sir David Attenborough and a few others in history, if you talk about changing the face of travel.
Yeah.
There's no one really comes in
completely.
The same category
completely.
As those
people. And he instilled in me over, I think, anyone else, a love of travel because I absolutely adored his travel documentaries and would have them on DVD and rewatch them
we went back through the back catalogue to prepare for that. And it was amazing to when you go as far back and you realise how...
Around the World in 80 Days, that was his first
one. That was game-changing in the same way that Attenborough changed the face of nature. Michael Palin changed the face of travel documentaries.
And he is such a nice guy.
Yeah.
He has a reputation for that, but truly, he is the nicest person. I would say the episode I think I enjoyed the most was Simon Reeve.
Okay.
He's the one that I think of
also
first.
A nice guy.
A very nice guy. But, you know, they both have an edge to them in that, you know, it's not bland.
His life story, I still must tell people the whole time whenever when people ask me about your podcast, I tell that life story and it still blows my mind. If you haven't listened to it, go back and listen to Simon Reeve. Wow. Okay. So Simon Reeve and Michael Palin.
Mm. I mean, obviously it's impossible to pick.
Yeah. But you have.
Yeah.
Okay. Last one, dream guest. Who hasn't come on? Who needs to come on?
Obviously, David Attenborough. Joanna Lumley, she's been in the works for a long time.
Joanna, if you're listening, come on.
And obviously, Oprah, Alex.
Obviously, yeah, because that's realistic.
Well, listen.
Never say never.
Oprah, if you're listening. Michelle Obama, please join me on the podcast.
Okay, so from that very positive desire and looking forwards to looking backwards to a negative aspect, your worst travel experience or the place you would never go back to.
So listeners, do you think I should answer both?
Yes.
I should do both?
Yes.
Okay, fine. I had thought about answers for both. I should be honest here. When people, this chapter can sometimes be my least favorite chapter in the podcast because it's an opportunity for people to either be amazing like James Martin was and just slag off a destination.
It becomes therapy when it's like, I'm going to let loose on all the places that have annoyed me throughout my entire life.
But also on the flip side, an opportunity to be extremely like just kind of politically, not politically correct, but just like...
Guarded.
They're not going to want to commit to a destination. To be fair, I have never gone somewhere yet and hated it. So it's not that I'm going to give you an answer of somewhere I hated, but somewhere I was really disappointed by.
Yeah.
Sorry, I actually do. I actually feel anxiety rising calling out the place. Well, what's ironic about my choice is that I think had I not been there recently with you, I could have named it as my hidden gem. So it has changed so much in such a in a relatively short period of time that it's like done a full 180. You don't know what I'm going to say, do you?
I've kind of got a few in my mind.
Yeah, it's Sedona.
Sedona. Arizona. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So,
which you mentioned on last week's podcast or a few weeks ago, in fact.
I did mention it, not in, well, in a way, in the way that it is also an energy vortex and is very powerful for people to travel to for that reason. Sedona. So Sedona was a place that I visited first when I was a child and I was just captivated by its magic. Ginormous red rock, ancient landscape.
Yeah. The landscape is epic.
The landscape is still epic.
Yeah.
But what has changed around it is that it has become so desperately touristy that its high street is just full of generic souvenir shops and strip mall type vibes. It had completely and utterly lost its magic for me. And I'd bigged it up so much to Alex. Like, you know, we went all the way to Arizona, to this part of the world.
I think that reflecting on your answer there, I think there's a few things that spring to mind with Sedona. One is, as a child, that there's a magic to the mystery of energy and vortexes that kind of can be quite captivating. And almost as a child, you're easier to filter some of the stuff that's happening around you. But when we came, I mean, firstly, we had just come from Zion, where it's very similar rock formations, very similar colors. And Zion is on epic levels.
Yeah.
And so when you arrive to Sedona, whilst it is amazing, you've just been to Zion, right?
Yeah.
And then on top of that, you see all this commercialization of that kind of energy vortex, sort of side of the spiritual side of things. And it's been ramped up to such degree as an adult, you look at it and go, oh God, is this like, this is overly commercial. And I think for us, those two things combined led to quite a damp squib of a experience there.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say San Francisco.
I actually thought about saying San Francisco as well. San Francisco is an amazing city with so much to offer.
So
at the moment, it's not in a great way.
No, no. And I also thought when you were talking about places, because when you think about places I'd never go back to, you could still have a great experience, but you would never go back a second time. The one that springs to mind for me is, again, in the US, is Niagara Falls, because it's an amazing first time experience. But the experience, the commercialization you talk about of Sedona, in terms of not the falls, to be clear, the town surrounding it.
We loved going to Niagara Falls and going on the boat. And it's, you know, it's a wonder of the world, isn't it? It must be.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Let's check. It's certainly on some list or many lists, it'll be there.
Yeah. And it was so fun going on the boat tour and doing all that, wearing the poncho, getting soaking wet, being in that amazing landscape. But it's like kind of dystopian, the actual Niagara.
It is.
So yeah, I mean, there you go. I hope that it's, I haven't upset anyone, but I also hope that you're enjoying the fact that I've actually said some places.
Right, that's not your worst travel experience, though.
No. My worst travel experience, I suppose, aside from not feeling amazing on planes sometimes, I think is an experience that we had when I was in Big Sur in California.
Oh my God, yes.
Yeah. So I was in Big Sur, by the way, is a beautiful part of the world, a beautiful part of California that I would very much recommend that you visit. However, I'd be careful for the arachnids that also live there. So I was sitting on the deck of our room, and I, as a side note, am extremely arachnophobic.
Extremely.
And I felt an intense pain in my hip, looked down, and just saw two bleeding fang marks. And having enjoyed a spider bite previously in Miami, I knew instantly that it was a spider bite. It started to bruise and spread quite rapidly.
Yeah.
And I began to get quite worried. I didn't see a spider, by the way. I just knew that it was a spider bite. And Alex and I decided that it was necessary that we went to, because I didn't feel great, that we went to urgent care.
Well, hang on. There's a gap in between where I then took it upon myself to Google spider bites, California, Big Sur.
Yeah.
And all the articles sort of said essentially there are two spiders. The most common spider bites are from spider A and spider B. And spider A, I can't remember what it was, quite a common spider. And the images were nothing like Holly's bite. And spider B was a black widow.
Yeah.
And actually, the article said surprisingly common bites in California. And actually, despite, you know, a lot, you know, I remember when I was a kid, I thought black widow, you'd die in 2 seconds. Like it was always the spider you wanted to avoid. And this article was quite calming and said, actually, it's quite common. And the instances of severe reaction are very low. And you should just check that it's not spreading.
Yeah.
Now, knowing Holly.
Yeah, you didn't tell me.
Had this fear. I did not tell her that I'd read this because that would have sent her into epic
meltdown.
But we went to urgent care.
And they drew with a pen around the bite. And if it had spread beyond that, then the venom was spreading, then we needed to go to hospital. So I knew that I'd had some kind of dangerous spider bite. And then we went on to our next destination. It was Carmel. Do you remember? And I was sitting at dinner. I went on a really long hotel tour with their PR person. And I felt awful. And I said to you, I'm really not feeling well. And you were looking at the bite and it hadn't spread. You were like, okay, well, it maybe isn't that surprising that you're not feeling well because you'd be bitten by a black widow spider. I think I started crying.
Yeah.
So I was fine, listeners.
Well, Mike Buck had actually asked what was your most terrifying travel experience. And I think that probably ticks the boat on that one.
Definitely.
Mm. Let's move on to hidden gems.
Mm. Yeah.
What is your top hidden gem?
Okay, so I have a place and a hotel. Can I give both? So I also want to give a shout out to a few other places.
Let's go for it.
Okay, so destination-wise, hidden gems, this is more for my listeners who are based outside of the US. My US listeners probably already know a lot of these places, but I'd like to give the shout out to Denver in Colorado.
Okay. Yeah.
I think it's a great city, great food scene, amazing landscape, great launch pad to view.
What was that? Was it Rhino District that we stayed in?
Yeah.
Yeah. So in the Ramble Hotel.
The Ramble.
It was
amazing hotel.
Rhino, R-I-N-O district. Yeah.
Very cool. I'd like to give a shout out to the Finger Lakes of upstate New York.
Yeah.
An amazing, beautiful.
And the Catskills or just the Finger Lakes?
I don't think the Catskills would really be a hidden gem for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Though we loved it. it's, I mean, you know, 3.5 hours from Manhattan. So it's like, it is a bit of a hidden gem. You have to make a bit of a journey to get there, but it's like a real taste of all American lakes surrounded by.
It was stunning.
How, you know, inns with porches and flags and maple syrup and pumpkins.
And actually, if anyone is ever planning to do like a road trip from, say, like Toronto to New York and to do upstate New York, it's quite near Buffalo when you get into the US, and it's worth spending 2, 3, 4 days there. It's
not in Buffalo, to be clear.
Not Buffalo, in the Finger Lakes, because there is so much to do there. And the food,
wine country,
and wine is insane.
Yeah, yeah, some of the best meals we've ever had with it. But I'm going to go with a destination that I mentioned a long time ago on the podcast. My hidden gem is going to be Ascona on Lake Maggiore in Switzerland.
Switzerland.
How can it be in Switzerland when it's on Lake Maggiore, you ask? But that is because a small slice of Lake Maggiore, which belongs largely to Italy and is one of the famous Italian lakes, belongs to Switzerland. And there's an area called Ticino in the north, in particular a town called Ascona, where there is this unbelievable blend of Swiss efficiency and hospitality and slickness with Italian style and passion and food. And it's like a place that we'd never been before, wasn't it?
It's a great answer, because everyone leaps to Como, and whilst we've been to Como and can attest to how amazing it is, Ascona had such a more accessible feel to it. But also I felt like it had a number of strings to its bow that you wouldn't suspect. So I, for instance, I remember going to dinner and there was this white Merlot that they make in Switzerland, and it's the only place I think in the world that makes this wine.
Yeah,
and they don't export it, because I think Switzerland only exports 2% of the wine it makes.
Yes, yeah, I remember.
And it was delicious. Mm. And again, there's a weird microclimate there. There was that little island in the middle of the lake that had a tropical garden, because it was weirdly like 5 degrees warmer than everywhere else around it.
It was sweltering. Do you remember?
Bizarre.
Amazing botanical garden that you could reach by a little speedboat or a ferry.
Yeah, an old house was there as well.
Yeah.
Kind of to walk around.
Yeah.
And I remember the multicolored front of the town.
Oh, yeah. Pastel colored promenade, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You think Switzerland, you don't think palm trees.
Yeah.
And like crystal clear water. And we were there, coincidentally, weren't we, at the time of the jazz festival, Ascona Jazz.
Internationally renowned jazz festival, and by pure coincidence.
Sitting, drinking Aperol by the lake, listening to jazz, looking out. I think that's my hidden gem, because I think that it's an unexpected destination.
Yes.
That you don't know that that is a part of Switzerland, and it is one of our favourite places we've ever been.
And accessible too. It's not far from Milan. It's got a lot going for it. And I've got to say, if you are looking at it, tying in with that jazz festival, it would be incredible, because it made it truly, truly magical.
Yeah, really, really magical place. And then my hidden gem hotel.
Yeah.
I'm going to go for, which Lucy Williams, one of my first guests, mentioned.
Yes, yeah.
Is Beltane Ranch, which is in Sonoma in the Californian wine country. If you want to like taste of American, like warm apple pie vibes, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Like quintessential white picket fence surrounded by
Verdant hills,
rolling countryside, like a cat sprawling in the sunshine, like,
but also American warmth, hospitality that's not too in your face.
Yeah, totally. So there'd be like freshly baked cookies served with the wine that they grow there.
Each room, they leave their own wine in the wine fridges in the room for you to drink.
And only recently did we finish some of the wine.
We had 3-4 years later, one of the reds that was spectacular.
Yeah. And home cooked meals. It's like it's a B&B.
Yeah.
It is a B&B.
Yeah.
Just high-end B&B, I would say.
Yeah, but also I wouldn't say high-end prices. I mean, when you compare that to some of the other hotels in area, it's so much more accessible.
Yes, and that's, definitely. That's why I think it's a real hidden gem, because you're in the most spectacular location. You've got the it's a great launch pad to explore Sonoma, which in itself is a hidden gem in comparison to Napa Valley. So there's two parts of Californian wine country, really. There's Napa and then the Sonoma. Sonoma is lesser visited than Napa, which has its, you know, grand reputation. So I would say give it a Google or have a look on Instagram. It's really quite gorgeous.
Okay. What, are there any,
Wait. Hold on a second. You've asked me them in the wrong order, Alex.
Is it Hidden Gem After All Time?
Worst is Chapter 6. You've done it the wrong way around, babes. How many times have you listened to my podcast? 100?
99 times. Yeah.
It goes the other way around.
I always thought that it went the most positive to the most negative, then to the gem.
No, it's Hidden Gem, then Worst Travel Experience. Wow. Then you go, my penultimate chapter is Worst Travel Experience. On to the final chapter.
And I have listened to all 99, so that is pretty embarrassing. Well, okay. I'm redoing. Now it's a new order for your 100th plus.
Okay, fine.
Triple figures has a new order.
You have the prerogative as a host today.
And I guess you've already mentioned West Sussex, which is your UK hidden gem.
Yeah, Arundel.
Arundel. There you go. Right. On to the final chapter of your travel diaries.
Yes.
Your top of your travel bucket list, which I know how long your bucket list is.
I mean, yeah.
Because we've got a shared note on our phone of a bucket list, so it's probably 30 long. So of the 30,
yeah,
what is top?
Do I only get to pick one, or can I say a few?
No, I want you to anoint one as number one, but we'll hear the short list too.
Well, anyone who listens to the podcast will know that Japan is picked as top of the bucket list for nearly every single person.
Unless
they've been there, in which case it becomes their all-time favorite destination.
I think it's the most answered for both those two chapters.
Yeah, without question. So Japan has to be there. But if I think about really where I'd like to transport myself right now, I think it would be South Africa.
Yeah, 100%.
I'd really love to do Cape Town, the Garden Route, and travel more extensively around the country. The reason that I haven't gone there is because it's a really long flight, as I talked about with Divya. But I'm going to get there one day. I'm going to find a way to get there.
Is there a third?
There was like a third and a fourth. I mean, there are so many, but at the moment, it feels like for me, Mexico and Slovenia are the others.
Okay. So Becky Price has a wonderful question linked to bucket lists. Mm. What's top of your bucket list to take Isabella to?
A destination or a hotel, do you reckon?
Let's go for both.
I would love to do a trip with Isabella that went around South America, more specifically like maybe Argentina, Chile, Patagonia area.
Yeah.
I think to take her somewhere so far away from home, again, epic landscapes, such diversity. I think that that's a bucket list trip that I'd love to do with her at some point when she's a bit older and can really take it in. But in terms of hotels, there are a few that I'd love to go with her, and then there are a few that are adults only that I will make it to grandma can look after.
The adult only hotel top of bucket list.
It would be Forestus in the Dolomites.
We were so close to going.
It was so close. You getting bloody COVID. That's why we didn't go.
Don't blame me.
You went to some football match or something, which is why we didn't get to go. Forestus is a hotel in the Italian Dolomites that is the ultimately Instagrammable hotel. So, so magnificent in terms of its views, its design, minimalist, beautiful wood. Oh, yeah. I've never been to the Dolomites, so...
They are spectacular to look at because they kind of go from these green hills straight into these jaggedy, angular, kind of almost aggressive looking. They're a bit like the Grand Tetons in Yellowstone in terms of just out of nowhere, these enormous kind of mountaintops emerge.
Yeah.
We will get there. And there's some amazing other hotels in that area. That area itself.
Rosa Alpina, another one that I'd love to go to. So that part of the world I would love to go to, just us. Hotels with her, Borgo Ignazia in Puglia.
Yeah.
And in terms of hotel, I don't know if it's family friendly or not, but I think my all-time bucket list hotel is Amenzo. Do you know which one I mean?
Is that the one in Greece?
Yeah.
Yeah.
In fact, amazing. it I read the other day that it was in that Knives Out sequel. That was that epic villa that they filmed it in.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It was all there.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, that was an epic location.
But I wanted to go there before it was in that film. It's, to me, it just looks like the ultimate in terms of, I mean, we'll never get there, I don't think, because I think it's ultra, ultra luxury.
Okay, but you, hang on, I'm going to call you out here. So you're not sure that's baby friendly. So I'm now going to ask you for a place you know is baby friendly, given we're now entering a new chapter where we need to be putting our baby first and thinking about what works for her. Of the hotels you know in the world that really welcome and put babies first, what one springs to mind?
Okay, so Patina in the Maldives is one that I've read about as being absolutely fantastic with children, and in that same atoll, the Ritz-Carlton.
Yes.
So that, I imagine her like toddling around on the beach, like pitter-pattering in the sea, us like hopefully relaxing somewhere for a brief moment. I think they have excellent kids clubs, but there are also a couple that are actually on my bucket list of places that we've been to already that I know are great for kids, like that I'd love to go back with her. Six Senses Ziggy Bay.
Yeah, fantastic.
In Oman, because it had like the kids club kids
there
club.
Was amazing.
Yeah, and you get...
I was jealous as an adult walking past the kids having more fun
exactly,
than I was.
Exactly. That's what you want, isn't it? And similarly, I think I mentioned it on the podcast before, we had a wonderful experience in the south of France at Arel Chateau de la Messadier in Saint-Tropez area. I tried my best there. Yeah. And that is known also for having an amazing kids club, of which, of course, as two...
I walked in and started playing on the arcade games in there.
Oh, yeah, when you went on your own for a little walk.
Yeah. And they had a little cinema. It was amazing. They had a whole kind of treetop walkway. That was incredible.
Yeah. So I would love to go back to those two hotels and experience them through her eyes.
Yeah.
But I mean, I really hope that she has as much of a love of the world as we do, that we can take her to so many countries. I would, as well as Patagonia, I'd love to take her to Sri Lanka and to travel again. Another country with such diversity, and in an easy way, you don't have to do internal flights. You could take trains or drive, go from a safari to a beach, to a beautiful city, to the tea plantations. Actually, I think that's top of my travel bucket list with her.
Sri Lanka. Wow. We've changed as we've gone through.
Sorry. Yeah. I've morphed my ideas. I mean, yeah.
Because so actually, if we go back to the theme of this whole episode, a relatively small place where it packs a lot into a small location. I mean, Sri Lanka is big. It's not a small country, but compared to South America, which is vast and huge, from jumping from Buenos Aires to Patagonia, you've got to be getting flights. In Sri Lanka, you can do a hell of a lot in a very small location without internal flights.
Yeah,
so that's
a great
answer.
That is such a good. That would be amazing. I would love to go there.
Right, last chance saloon.
Oh no, more?
No, this is just... Do you feel...
Oh my gosh, I'm looking at a lot of questions.
No. Do you feel that there's somewhere that you haven't mentioned that you'd like to give a last minute shout out to?
Okay, in general, I would just like to give a shout out to the UK, I suppose. The UK is incredible. And I've not mentioned Dorset, I've not mentioned Devon, I've not mentioned Cornwall, I've not mentioned the Lake District, I've not mentioned the Peak District, I've not mentioned lots of Scotland.
The Highlands.
Wales.
The Cairngorms.
The Cairngorms, exactly. So, yeah, I think there's just so much to explore here in the UK. And COVID, if anything, just really served to emphasise that to me.
That was huge for us, because I'd never been to Cornwall since I was about 5-6 years old. And because of lockdown, I think we went like four times in 2 years.
Well, we travelled a lot around the UK during that time.
Yeah.
And I just felt really proud, actually. And I'm looking back at that time, I'm so happy that we got to experience so much of what the UK has to offer. And I'd be thrilled if I could only travel around the UK for the next few years.
Yeah. That's a very lovely way to end it, actually, because I feel the same. I've got a few trips coming up in the UK, and there's just so much to offer. Well, Holly, those were your travel diaries. Thank you so much for joining me on the Travel Diaries podcast / you on the Travel Diaries podcast. That was your 100th episode. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So proud of the 99 that have preceded this and where it's going to go. And I hope all you listeners have enjoyed it as much as I have watching it progress over the last 3 years. Four years, three years.
So nice. That's so nice of you to say. And I can't not take this opportunity to just say thank you. Such a heartfelt thank you, and not start crying.
You already are.
But I mean, it has been just such an incredible journey, and I can't wait for episode 200. Can't wait to get there. Thank you so much to everyone who has tuned in every week and made it what it is today, because it is down to you guys listening that it's made it what it is. So thank you. And thank you, Alex.
Thank you very much.
Oh, a big thank you to Alex for his podcast debut, and a big thank you to you all, as I said. Here's to the next 100. Thanks so much for listening today. If you'd like to hear more from the podcast, don't forget to hit subscribe, or if you use Apple Podcasts, to press follow, so that a new episode lands in your podcast app each week. If you want to be the first to find out who's joining me on next week's episode, come and follow me on Instagram. I'd love to hear from you. I'm at Holly Rubenstein, and you'll also find me on Twitter and TikTok, as of a few weeks ago, also at Holly Rubenstein. And if you can't wait until then, remember there's the first 8 seasons to catch up on. That's over 90 episodes to keep you busy there. All the destinations mentioned by my guests are included in the episode show notes here on your podcast app and listed on my website, thetraveldiariespodcast.com. Thanks everyone, and I'll be back next week. Today's episode is supported by Airbnb. It has been a long old winter here in the UK, and in between podcast seasons, I'm going to take a little bit of downtime to seek out some warmth. I'm jetting off to the Greek island of Mykonos, visiting some places that have been on my bucket list. And while I'm hopefully soaking up some Mediterranean sun, my home will be hosting guests from all over the world, thanks to Airbnb. It's the perfect way to make your travels even more rewarding. Instead of letting your home sit empty while you're off exploring new destinations, why not turn it into a cozy retreat for fellow travelers, just like I do? Whether you choose to rent out your entire space or just a spare room, it's up to you. I list my spare bedroom, and it's been a fantastic experience, both financially rewarding and a great way to connect with new people. So if you're planning your own summer getaway, or any trip for that matter, consider putting your home on Airbnb. It's a fantastic way to earn extra income that can go towards your travel expenses, souvenirs, or even that special treat you've been eyeing. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.co.uk/host. Thank you to Airbnb for supporting the Travel Diaries.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.